Lead. It's Friday, December the 14th, the end of an interesting week, wouldn't you say? Well, I want to talk about two things today. I'll talk about the fiscal cliff and, you guessed it, Sister Hillary. Well, of course, the news out of Washington is that there is no movement on this fiscal cliff between Mr. Boehner and Mr. Obama. But we have to understand what's really going on. Frankly, I don't think there's anything that the president and John Boehner have not yet hammered out or talked about. But the fiscal cliff stalemate has much to do with what both sides can sell their folks. Whether what Barack Obama could sell to his Democrat and what Boehner could sell to his Republicans. I don't think that there's any issue with the huge differences that they have. They're selling this thing that there's all these differences and it's such a big dramatic issue. But really what they both are doing is biding time so that the minions behind them can work out the details. The staffs have to work out the details. Every move has to be punched with lots of checking out on the inside as to whether things could fly. You have to remember that the Republican Party right now is fragmented and there's a lot of dissension going on internally. The Republicans are bruised, they're very angry, and within the party itself, there are factions fighting for different things, because now it's not just about the fact that Romney lost and the Republicans as a party have to get themselves together. Within the party, there are groups that are more conservative or less conservative and more angry than others that are not so angry. There are some who want to still stick with their agenda, others who find that they need to get on with things because they have their constituents to face. It's not just the big party anymore. In the wake of a loss as devastating as the Republican Party has suffered with Romney losing, now it's every man for himself, in a way, on one front. It's also the party fighting for regained turf. So there's all of that going on. when you really look at the issues in this mess, you find really that there isn't very much that the Democrats and the Republicans really disagree on. Barack Obama is not really asking for a whole bunch of new things. This is what is interesting. It is being made to look like there is a lot that they're fighting about. But essentially, the Democratic Party as a party, Barack Obama as a president, is not very radical in what it is he's asking for. This is all PR. He's asking really for two things. There isn't a whole radical move on the part of Barack Obama here. He's not presenting a dramatically different picture for the Republicans to react to. He's not overhauling anything. He's not retailoring anything. He's just asking for two tweaks, essentially. And the Democrats are not prepared right now to just throw all these things out. They're saying, look, would you agree that we need to raise taxes and we need to tweak the tax code, essentially, just two little tweaks we want. He wants to raise the taxes on individuals who are earning more than $213,600 a year. I mean, individuals earning $213,600 a year, and couples or families earning more than $267,600 a year. That's it. Now, the way they're carrying on, you would think that there's a lot of stuff in the middle of all of that. There's this and that and the next. No, it's just this little tweak that he wants. And apart from that, he wants to deal with a couple of tweaks to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. Now, the couple of tweaks that happens will affect a whole bunch of folks. But he's presenting it as just a couple of tweaks. When you see the chemistry between Obama and Boehner, you get the sense that individually, personally, person to person, they have already found common ground. They haven't been able to, especially on the Republican side, they haven't been able to come to terms with all the factions within both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party that they have to satisfy. So they haven't been able to bridge the gap. Now, how this plays on the outside is they have to tell people how difficult it is, you know, just between Romney and Boehner, that the fight is between Romney, between Obama. Are these Freudian slips that I'm making? Between Obama and Boehner, that there is some huge issue going on there. It is behind the scenes. And that is a really interesting story, and we have to find out how that is playing behind the scenes. We saw some signals that the Democrats are a little tweaked with Obama. They're having some trouble with the fact that he's not, quote, strong enough. What that translates to is that the Democratic Party has some trouble. There's some factionalism that the president has to work on, because some pockets within the party, I am sure, want him to stand strong and even make harder concessions, take a harder line with Boehner for concessions on some of the things that they want. But clearly, on the Republican side, the factions are standing their ground with Boehner, and they want And as much as the Republican Party lost and suffered all these different defeats, they do not want certain things to go down without a big fight. And it's Boehner having some trouble selling the revamped version, selling these tweaks to his folks on that other side of the aisle. It's politics, folks. And they are prepared to just make this thing look huger than it is, but that is really the point. Every, quote, concession, unquote, involves a whole bunch of backdoor work on each side of the aisle. So far, Obama is doing okay with his Democrats, but make no mistake, even there are problems. He has not had the full 100% permission of the Democratic Party. There are people who understand within the Democratic Party, look, we only have four more years, but, you know, congressional races and other races are hinging on what it is Obama is going to come out of this negotiation session with Boehner on. There are other political victories in the midst, and they're not going to get any. They're not going to get any softer with Obama on some of the positions that he is taking. But we have to be prepared that in this business of quote negotiation unquote, it's the regular folks who are going to lose. The political objectives must be met to make Obama look good as a second-term president, and he's got a lot to do to situate himself for the political afterlife. For Boehner, he's got to do something to revive the power of the Republican Party, the power and appeal, because the next go-round, presidential races and congressional races, the party has a lot of ground to cover. They lost big. This is huge to understand. They lost big this time around. And that is why, you know, Romney is not showing up anywhere. They're very angry with Romney because they thought he had enough of a chance to win, not just individually, but to win for the party. So they are fighting for the revival of the party and the party's credibility with voters. Voters are very angry with the Republicans. Those Republicans who voted and saw that Romney had a very good fighting chance, how did he screw this up? And what a blow it dealt to the psychological aspect of people voting this time, wanting definitely, they saw a chance to kick Obama out. And darn it, they missed again. This is a very large burden for the Republicans to bear. So that's what's going on behind the fiscal cliff. As I look at it, I could see that there really isn't very much difference philosophically between Obama and the Republicans. There really isn't very much of a difference here. And it's not like President Obama is coming in with a tidal wave of changes. He is not committed to doing any of that. He's asking for modest, these requests are modest tweaks to essentially the same program that he had, which essentially is a Clintonian program. Speaking of Clintons, it might be a very bad joke to make, but I'll go with it anyway, to ask what Hillary's favorite takeout is. Her favorite takeout is fried rice. Get it? I came up with that in the middle of a very strange morning so far. But Hillary Clinton, the feminist, is going to wind up her brand-enhancing tenure as Secretary of State with a death blow to the ascendancy of Susan Rice. And there'll be no climbing on her shoulders. Susan Rice is out. She has, of course, withdrawn her name for consideration as the next Secretary of State. But that also points up a very typical way the Clintons do business. And Hillary Clinton's brand is one of deftly slithering through the cracks and coming out smelling like a rose. Susan Rice, in withdrawing, says to people she knew that she's a fighter, but she is not going to fight at the cost of what is right for our country. And the president accepted her resignation from the nomination process, saying that he was convinced that Susan Rice really was right for the job, but he accepted the fact of her resignation, convinced that she was a person of character and all of the good things that he would say in this defeat. But what happened here? Hillary Clinton walks into a job. Let's just give you the very fast version. She walks into the job of Secretary of State not nearly as qualified as Susan Rice is for the job. Hillary Clinton had fewer credentials walking in the door. But what she had was just raw power, and she had the leverage of Bill Clinton, so I call them, they're coupled together, the Billary administration. So she walks into the job really not as qualified academically for it. Susan Rice, by the way, was a protege of another Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, and it was Madeleine Albright who had recommended Susan Rice to the job from the beginning as a diplomat on the long track to that high prize. It was Madeleine Albright who had mentored Susan Rice and brought her along and had recommended to Bill Clinton, the Clinton administration, that she be appointed as Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. That's back in 1997. It's not that Susan Rice was the greatest and most popular person. The Congressional Black Caucus didn't like her. Others found that she was very ambitious. In other words, she was like the black version of Hillary Clinton. But she was a very ambitious person, but applied herself and got all the credentials and all the experience necessary. So on that basis, that objective basis, she walked in the job, or she had prepared herself for the job of Secretary of State, more so than Hillary Clinton was prepared for the job. But Clinton ruled she had the leveraging power of the association with Bill Clinton, the former First Lady, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and she just basically got the job as a concession for her husband's indiscretions and for sticking through that period of humiliation like a good soldier. So she got the nomination as a U.S. senator very easily. She handily won that because that was the prize. She had left, you remember, she had left the administration, to put it mildly, because she was co-president of the United States. She had left about 2 years early and did so to qualify her residency in the state of New York in order to accept what came her way, which is what she desired, next to the president. She didn't win that the first time out, so she got the U.S. Senate seat instead, and made a great impression there in the U.S. Senate as a very likable senator, a very productive senator, a very high-profile senator. By the way, she was not that popular. She was not that popular as a first lady, but she managed to make some good hay as a U.S. senator. And then as Secretary of State, did a lot, ran around a lot, did a lot of PR work, did a lot of things involved in all these different hot spots all over the world and so forth. So she walks out of her job with a lot of political capital. She is, in fact, favored in New York State right now over a possible contender, if she runs, in Governor Cuomo, who is expected also to run for the presidency. But she is far more popular right now in New York State than he is. So when she leaves, she will be leaving at the peak of her popularity. We will discuss her popularity at another time, but these are the objective facts right now. She is very well poised to take advantage of a number of opportunities as she leaves office. But as she leaves office, she leaves on the back of Susan Rice. Susan Rice was set up to take the hit on Benghazi, and Hillary Clinton just will walk through the process. She will slither through the cracks as the much-heralded Secretary of State, and Susan Rice will be left with the splinters. She will be left associated with the attack on the consulate in Benghazi and the fiasco that it was, and the stench of that is going to fall on her, not Hillary. So much for feminism and sisterhood and all the other good things that people associate with Hillary Clinton. The woman is a political animal through and through. And so ends the tale of Susan Rice's career for the moment. She'll have to work on picking up the pieces and reclaiming her name. The lady did nothing wrong, except read a statement. She said she agreed to do this favor for the White House. They did not hand the person who should have carried the ball on this one. They did not hang Hillary Clinton in this endeavor. They made Susan Rice take the job. And wouldn't you know, she now is the person who is on the downward spiral. Hillary, her companion on Obama's cabinet, walks away smelling like a rose. And even though Hillary Clinton is scheduled to testify before the investigating committee looking into Benghazi, she would be doing so on the high note. She would be coming in as a high-level official who will now deftly explain that different things were known at different times, and she gets to be the person doing this on the high plane. Susan Rice has already been saddled with the burden of eating the failure at Benghazi. That will be associated with her and not Hillary. So Hillary gets away again, and this time she gets her favorite takeout, which is fried rice. We will take a break and come back right after this. And B.B. King with Sinner's Prayer, a different kind of news story. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lee. What's your story? Today, as we wrap up the week, 1-888-874-4888. 1-888-874-4888. You see how politics works? It really, in the end, is never as deep as people want us to think it is, whether it's the fiscal cliff or whether it is the resignation of a person who basically was set up. What it is raw, raw politics. That's how it works all the time. And seldom is the information that we're getting accurate. Seldom is it really the truth. We would have you believe that they're sitting down and talking deeply about what is in the interests of people when Obama and Boehner show up and they're talking about how deep the process really is. It really isn't that deep. It really is not. Both sides have already carved out their political turf, and it is all about raw politics happening behind closed doors. Who is going to come out smelling like a rose? How do they configure things so that when they walk out the room and start holding these news conferences, that Boehner can hold his head up high as a worthy opponent of Barack Obama, and Barack Obama can then in turn boast about having had his way. He has, you know, seen his program through. He's a strong president and a great leader. Because right now, everything Barack Obama does is for posterity. He has to establish in the next 4 years a reputation that will haunt him for, or not haunt him, or sometimes even be admirable for the rest of his life. That's number one. Priority number one is both sides have to come out smelling good. The Republicans have a very testy future, and that has to do with what the party as a party, how it would survive in the near future. What is it that the Republican Party will come to represent in this next go-round, in the next 4 years? They have to rebuild, they have to reconstruct, they have to regain turf, they have to regain ground. So both sides are making it look like there is a lot going on with the actual business of the people. Don't kid yourself. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
How are you, Eutrice?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good, I'm glad to hear that. You know, Eutrice, there's a real serious viciousness in this whole fiscal cliff thing that is not really being discussed by no one in the media at all. And the reality is that this is strictly about greed and the 2% and how they can just drain the 98% more and more. The reality is this. There are other agencies where they could make cuts to instead of going after Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security that would do far more for the benefit of the country than going after these so-called entitlements. But, you know, the one thing that people don't realize that go along with this madness is we live in a country now to where we don't take care of our family members the way that you took care of your parents and your brothers and sisters helped with your parents and your aunt and uncle took care of their parents and things of that nature. So what they're doing now is setting this country up to a point to where, let's say, 15 to 20 years when Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security are cut so bad that people are not going to be able to go and stay in nursing homes and things of that nature because they just don't have the financial assets or the means to be in those type of facilities. With the way the family is disfragmented now, children are not going to take their parents in. So what's going to happen to those people? You know what I mean? It is so many people out there that are going to face this, but we don't think far enough ahead to see the game that's being played just so that a greedy
I don't think so. I think, Jay, that people understand. People know that. There is no illusion about that. The people know this. But this, what we're talking about is how is politics played once these folks get the vote. Once the vote is over, it is business as usual. And the business as usual is about winning at their level, how they interpret winning at their level. Barack Obama's health care program is horrific, and it will have devastating impact. We know that. But he sold it when he was running, and people bought it when they voted for him. The cuts that are looming, despite the fact that Barack Obama is taking the position that he is really only after the rich, look, everybody is going to be hurt. Let's not be silly about that. We know that. That's what he sold, and that's what people voted for. So the vote is over. People have re-elected Barack Obama, and they will now have to deal with the consequences of that. But they have voted for him. They have not voted for Romney, and that's established. Now comes the next level. This is what politics is all about. After the vote, it's now about the powerhouses dealing with each other. And in dealing with each other, the trade-off is about the degree to which the people who just voted, the degree to which they will get hurt, and the degree to which the Republican Party can claim or reclaim its political turf in order to survive as a party. That's really where the subject is right now. Well, we could talk, I mean, regular folks can talk about, this anti-human aspect of politics, but this is politics. Barack Obama's program is going to hurt. It's going to hurt no matter what. Whether a Democrat got into the White House or a Republican got into the White House, the fact is there is some pain coming. The question is right now, as they negotiate, understand what the situation is. The people, that's second. What's happening right now is that the political entities that sit across from each other at the table have different imperatives, and those imperatives take precedence right now. Barack Obama has 4 years. He is going to have to win, quote-unquote, in order to survive after he's gone from the White House at the level, say, that Bill Clinton has survived. Bill Clinton is doing very well. Bill Clinton has paid, the estimate was, close to $100 million in speaker's fees alone. He's doing very, very well. And Bill Clinton's administration, I've said it here before, the seeds of today's frustrations and suffering were sown in Bill Clinton's administration. He was the guy who said, don't forget, he was the one who said he was ending welfare as we know it. But Bill Clinton's charm bought him another 4 years at the White House. Same here. People signed on to the curtailing of social programs under Bill Clinton. They voted for him. And he was able to boast, as he left office, that he left the White House in good shape financially. Of course, you can say that because social programs paid for it under Bill Clinton. They never think that that is true, but it is true. Barack Obama is Bill Clinton part two. Nice liberal guy, won with the convincing vote, has now the will of the people in his hands, and now what takes over is raw politics. He has to still maintain that persona. He still has to maintain that public the public view that this is a president of the people, but make no mistake, people are going to be hurting under Barack Obama's programs. They've cast it that he's fighting to tax the rich. It's a public relations game. They have to do that. So when you watch what's going on between them, between Boehner representing the Republicans and Barack Obama representing a reelected president who is doing the will of the people, all along the PR machine is working to cast these different sides in a particular light. That is what is taking the time. There is really no huge difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, ideologically. There really is no huge difference here. 1-888-874-4888 is the number to call. I know it sounds a little odd what I'm saying, but if you really look at it, you'd see that it's actually true. There's really no huge difference. It's not like Barack Obama is walking in there with a brand new program. It's the same old with tweaks. And those tweaks will cost, believe me, they will cost us. But we will have such faith in him as we did with Clinton. We will have such an identification with the president. We will believe so much that he really means the best for the country and for us, that we will take the suffering in stride. He will put some extra sugar in that spoonful of medicine that we have to swallow. And people will go along with it and say, well, you know, the guy is under intense pressure and he has our sympathy and empathy. And we can't get mad at him. They know all of that. When they sit down at the table, it's a whole different agenda that's happening right now. We are not privy to that. But that's where the stalemate is. That's where the political work is right now. They are seeing to the higher agenda right now. They have to work it out so that at some point, all sides can walk away smelling good. Then, in the process of all of that, we will find out how much we, as the people, will have to lose in order for all sides to walk away smelling good. That's politics. That's politics. We don't like it. It is unfair. But we shouldn't be fooled about what it is that we're looking at. That's what we're looking at. It's not about any of these complex matters that are causing people to wait up all night and, you know, how each person is looking to save the American people. And all. No, no, no. It's none of those things. It is, I got 4 years, and I intend in my next 4 years, I have my agenda. I have to come out smelling like a rose for the next 4 years. All things are to serve one purpose, and that is that I should have a good afterlife. And history will record my term in office the way I want it. And that's what Clinton has done. History has recorded Clinton as a fantastic president. Yeah, he had a little problem or two, you know, Monica Lewinsky and small things like that. But essentially, the Clinton persona has never been more valuable. He is making so much money right now. He has so much clout and power right now that it even transferred onto Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, don't forget, you have to understand, Hillary Clinton, on an objective basis, would never have had a political life unless, in the first instance, the black folks of Arkansas made it possible for Bill to be governor, made it possible for her to be first lady eventually, first lady. And other than that, these are the objective facts. What moved the Clintons along, apart from a diehard black vote, what moved them along and brought them into higher and higher levels of power was a PR campaign. Bill Clinton is riding on a history that is completely different from what it is he projects. He projects that he is still, I mean, he's still the president of the United States for all intents and purposes, and he still is riding on a reputation that is completely at odds with what it is he portrays. This is what you have to understand about how politicians think. And although he was essentially a Republican in sheep's clothing as president, he enacted some of the most retrograde policies in terms of social programs, he is never, ever called to account for that. He looms large as, you know, in fact, his mentor or his example that he traded on was Kennedy. Same thing with Kennedy. Kennedy's administration was almost lethal to black folks and poor folks, but you would never think that. Kennedy was not the civil rights icon that most people think that he is. He's associated all the time with civil rights strides and civil rights, and what a compassionate president he was. He was not. His administration was not that compassionate. People had to fight like hell under the Kennedy administration to get any civil rights work done, but you would never think that. And forever and ever and ever, John F. Kennedy's memory would loom large as one of the most humane, one of the most progressive presidents of all time. That is not what the picture looks like when you start to disassemble things and separate the PR from the facts. Clinton's the same thing. And when you look at Obama, you would see the same thing. But they are people of history. Obama understands the importance of history, the same way that Clinton understood the importance of history. And for the sake of history, you have to do certain things, and this is one of the examples. You have to manage your brand so that you do not damage yourself for the next 4 years. And that is why Obama is, quote, standing strong, unquote. But there isn't very much difference. I keep saying that. There isn't very much difference in the agenda Obama would enact in the next 4 years from the first 4 years. There really isn't very much difference. It just is made to look that way. I hate to say it, but that's how it is. We don't like it, but we have to accept it. And if you accept that political reality, hopefully this gives voters an opportunity to reevaluate how they approach politics at their level as a voter. Which is why you don't wait till until a president gets in order to now pose your agendas, which the black community does all the time. They support the candidate, not understanding that there are different levels of politics. And at this level of politics, you're not in the room. So you have to exact your concessions long before these folks get elected. Long before they get into office, you have to play hardball and not be emotional about it. Because now you're not in the room. You're not there anymore. And the people, especially the winning party, is transacting business, quote, in your name, unquote. You have given them leverage. You have given them permission to do things. You just have to deal with that. You just have to deal with it. I hate to say so, but that's the fact. Well, we've come to the end of our program today, and I hope it causes you to pay attention to the tone of what we're hearing about the fiscal cliff and understand that it really isn't that difficult to understand. It is politics being played now at a different level. Expect that we will suffer one way or the other. We will suffer. I want to thank you for listening. Tune in again on Monday. Have a good weekend. And pay attention to the news in a different way. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.